grand jury reports that 90% of all juvenile arrests in Los Angeles County are for narcotic-related offenses. And in the last 9 years, such arrests have increased by 2,000%.
I don't know. Do I frighten you? Because, like, a lot of people look at me around the streets and think that I'm a criminal because I use drugs. My parents think I'm a criminal, and I've been told that I was a criminal because I use something that I enjoy doing. But the people around me don't think I am. The body that's connected to this leg is a very good friend of mine, and I care an awful lot about him. And when he looks at me, he doesn't see someone who takes a lot of drugs. He doesn't see a sex maniac. He doesn't see a pervert, but he sees what I am.
24% of the patients at the Los Angeles County Hospital are cases of drug overdose.
I think something should be said about our parents and the adults that, yeah, that the kids have as images, people that they watch and admire, the ones that get up in the morning and just can't seem to make it, so they take a diet pill to get going, and they go all day long, and then they have a martini before dinner, and maybe one earlier in the afternoon, and then they're still kind of wired from the diet pills, and so they take a sleeping pill to go to sleep at night, and the same thing goes on in the morning. Now, I mean, this is what they're supposed to. Then they complain about kids smoking dope and taking pills and all that the kids have had to see from the minute they were, you know, old enough to realize what was going on were people taking pills. You know, there seems to be some discrepancy somewhere.
The Los Angeles Suicide Prevention Center tells us that drugs now account for 40% of all recorded suicides.
Drugs. The problem grows. The user suffers, and society struggles to find solutions. I'm Jerry Dunphy, and for the next hour, I'd like to explore with you the dilemma of drug abuse in our community. Our premise is that we're poorly informed, that there are truths and myths about drugs which cry for clarification. And we particularly invite the attention of young viewers as KNXT presents If You Turn On. The drug abuse problem has reached epidemic proportions. The community is worried. The hook generation is defensive. Everyone has his opinions, his prejudices, and his theories when it comes to the subject of drugs. What are the myths? What are the truths? On the one hand, there's an appeal for more anti-drug laws. On the other, there's a movement for more lenient laws. Between the extremes, there's a vast middle ground of opinion, some of it fact, some of it fiction, and much of it based on limited information. There's need for clarification, and toward that end, we've developed 8 provocative statements about drug abuse. 8 statements to be classified as truth or myth. They'll be presented and discussed by 2 kinds of experts. Professionals who deal with the drug abuse problem on a day-to-day basis and youngsters from the Southern California area. Some who've never used drugs and others with a personal history of drug abuse. We're also grateful to concerned citizens Greg Morris, Artie Johnson, and Carol Burnett. Now, the first of our truth or myth statements. Marijuana is physically addictive. What's your opinion? Is that a truth or is it a myth? Marijuana is physically addictive.
Cannabis, hemp, marijuana. In the street, it's called grass, pot, or weed. This is a kilo. It weighs about a pound. These dried leaves, when rolled into a paper, make a marijuana cigarette known as a stick or a joint. This is a lid of marijuana, the current price for which is $15. The question, aside from the dollars, is what's the real cost of a marijuana habit?
When you get into talking about habitual use of marijuana, you are talking about possibly habitual use to anything. Someone once used the word hype in describing, you know, almost anything you can get hyped onto. You can habitually use, you know, the 5 o'clock movie, or beer, or marijuana, or people that use an aspirin every night to go to bed.
Among the people I associate with, marijuana took on the form of a social habit, more or less like a before dinner drink with older people. And we'd sit around and smoke a joint socially instead of perhaps having a drink.
But from my own experience, I've never been hooked or strung out on weed. I guess I had an emotional dependency, but I was never hooked.
I work at the Los Angeles Free Clinic, and we've never, or maybe, I don't think we've ever had a case of anyone coming in and saying they had a problem with marijuana, addiction or use.
Well, I know from experience, because I've been arrested before because of marijuana and big quantities of it, and where I was living, we had to smoke a lot of it to get rid of it. And it got pretty bad because, like, we had maggots in the house, because marijuana, after a while, after heavy usage of it, makes you really passive and very tired, and your mind's really spaced out, and you just don't really care about anything except just sitting there, just tripping out.
If you talk about somebody with a heavy marijuana habit, I assume you're talking about somebody who's smoking marijuana very often. And the question I would ask is, what aren't they doing when they're smoking marijuana? Why aren't there enough satisfying things for them to do without turning on? And why does turning on make the things that they're doing so much more satisfying, if that's the excuse people are using? So my question goes more to what isn't being done during that time.
Well, I think that by saying that marijuana causes a loss of motivation, you're not, marijuana isn't necessarily the cause, it's just a parallel circumstance. Because there is no drug that's going to change your mind and make you do something that you don't want to. You know, it has to be inside anyway, in the first place. And people who really get hung up on marijuana usually have a deeper problem, you know, something more serious than just, you know, smoking joints all the time.
There is a physical addiction to tobacco, which there is not to marijuana. And there is a physical addiction to heroin, but there is no physical addiction to marijuana, although many people do develop a psychological dependence, which makes it necessary for them to smoke it whenever they become anxious.
Marijuana is physically addictive. Truth or myth? KNXD commissioned the Field Research Corporation to sample public opinion on drugs. A total of 504 persons over 18 years of age were interviewed in Los Angeles and Orange counties. This sampling was taken in March of this year. Here are the answers to our survey. Marijuana is physically addictive, 50%. One half of those interviewed believe this statement is true. Only 33%, one third of those polled, thought it was a myth. And 17% were undecided. KNXT also sampled the opinions of 40 recognized authorities on drug abuse, medical men, counselors, psychologists, social workers, on the same statement. Marijuana is physically addictive. Their response? Truth? Only 10% here. Myth? 85%. Undecided? 5%. The public opinion and expert opinion do not agree. With regard to the addictiveness of marijuana, most professionals warn us of potential psychological or emotional dependence as a result of habitual marijuana use. However, as for our statement, marijuana is physically addictive, that's a myth, despite public opinion to the contrary. How well are we informed about drugs? Is there an information gap? Well, take uppers, for example. What are they? Ask any high school student. He'll tell you that uppers are stimulants. Try this statement. Stimulant drugs, such as pep pills and speed, are potential killers. Is that a truth or a myth, in your opinion?
Uppers, the stimulants, the amphetamines and the methamphetamines, the pep pills and the diet pills. Bennies, or whites, to keep you awake. Dexies and hearts. These come in all colors to pep you up. At least temporarily. There's liquid speed and tablet speed. Crystals. This is a powder which comes in papers. This is the stuff that speed freaks inject into their bloodstreams. They tell me that much of this is homemade, with no guarantee of what it contains when you buy it on the street. It's sort of a chemical roulette, isn't it?
I don't know, just, you know, speaking for myself, you know, if I was, you know, speeding or something, and, you know, my brain was dripping out my ear, you know, it wouldn't really matter. You know, I just kind of stuff it back in. And I don't, it's like from, there was a hole in my my mental body, you might say, you know, and I tried filling it with drugs, you know, and it didn't, you know, I thought it filled it for a while, you know, did a pretty good job, you know, but it kind of lost its thing for me, you know, and I just, zap. I filled it with something else, you know, something that's real, you know, and not chemically induced.
People have driven from as far away as South Orange County to the Los Angeles Free Clinic because there was no place they could feel that they could take these people who were sick or dying. And so they brought them to us, and by the time they got them to us, they were already dead, and there wasn't anything we could do.
You know, the illegality of drugs makes it almost impossible to get immediate treatment. And this has probably resulted in many deaths or near deaths because they couldn't get to the hospital because they didn't want to be busted.
Well, since I've been sitting here and hearing about all these drugs, I couldn't relate to them really because, see, I come from, I guess you'd call it a form of a ghetto, a barrio. It's a Chicano barrio. And these drugs they've been talking about right now, I hope this doesn't sound prejudiced, but it's more like white man's drugs. Because, see, down where I live, you can't afford these drugs. They cost too much. And also, these drugs are realization drugs, and who wants to realize they live in a barrio? You know, it's a heavy come down, so you just take more. And speed is, you know, really hard on the body. But you can get it just about anywhere.
Pep pills and Benny's contain the, as well as diet pills, contain the same ingredients that are in Speed, Crystal, or whatever the current terminology is. These are used not only by young people, but in very vast quantities by middle-aged and older people. They can, in moderate quantities, precipitate serious psychotic disorders.
We find that people who abuse these drugs, for the most part, have a great inadequacy about themselves and feel very impotent as people. And the reason they use speed is because it makes them feel so powerful and positive. Amphetamines kill brain cells, and in the autopsies of those children who've been found dead from amphetamines, there is tremendous destruction of the brain cells themselves, which are never replaced. So anyone who shoots amphetamines is slowly destroying their brain and killing the cells which will not regenerate.
Stimulant drugs, such as pep pills and speed, are potential killers. Truth or myth? First, a look at the answers from our public opinion survey. The overwhelming opinion here is that the statement is a truth. 87% to 5%, with only 8% undecided. Now, how does that jibe with our survey of 40 recognized authorities? Here, too, there's little argument, 95% to 5% favoring truth. However, when used moderately, according to prescription, stimulants do serve a legitimate medical purpose. But we're concerned with the abuse of these drugs, drugs which stimulate the central nervous system, affect respiration, and can aggravate the heart. But our statement, stimulant drugs, such as pep pills and speed, are potential killers, is definitely true. From uppers, the logical step is to downers, the depressant drugs. Now, these drugs, called barbiturates, are very prominent in today's drug scene, particularly among teens and, sad to say, preteens. We know that they're addictive, but how dangerous are they when compared, for example, with a well-known hard drug like heroin? Our statement, withdrawal from barbiturates, such as sleeping pills, is more dangerous than heroin withdrawal. Truth or myth?
They call them downers. They're the depressants, the sleeping pills classified as barbiturates. Many of you have them at home in your medicine cabinets. In the drug culture, out in the streets and at your neighborhood school, you can show them to the kids and they'll tell you what they're called. Reds, yellow jackets, rainbows, blue heavens. Colorful pills, aren't they? Colorful names, too. But they don't make for a very colorful life.
for Reds, I really put down on them because they're mainly a bust. And also, you can die from them. I know through experience because I have ended up in the hospital twice.
Or I would say any area of Los Angeles that I would say is predominantly black or gradually becoming predominantly black. We very seldom hear of people going through withdrawals. Most of the time when you hear of, you know, a bad case, you know, behind barbiturates, it's when we go to one of the morgues or to the mortuary or something and see, you know, sometime your best friend laying there dead off of different barbiturates.
Well, like I was talking to these chicks once, because, like, if you want Reds, all you got to do is go in the heads and the skulls, and you just sit there for a while and you get them. And I was telling him about the withdrawals and what can happen, and they didn't believe me.
Barbiturates for me, that was my bag, you know. Downer freak. And, like, I don't know. See. Like the girl said before, you know, it was, you know, fun stumbling around and, you know, doing, you know, whatever you feel is, you know. For me, I felt when I was on downers, you know, I was doing what I really wanted to do, you know. I was really loose. I really got loose, you know. I could say, well, I better not say it. and I really felt loose, you know. I felt I was more me, you know. And when I came down off the downers, you know, while I was all paranoid, you know, I crawled back in my little, you know, shell. And, like, downers just brought, you know, this out of me, you know, got really loose and things, you know. And, like, I got strung out using so many a day, you know. And when I put down on them, you know, I didn't go to the hospital, you know. I heard that you could die, you know, and things like that. But that really didn't bother me, you know, because I really didn't give a
When you talk about withdrawal per se from Seconal, Amitol, Reds, Blue Heavens, Yellows, Yellow Jackets, whatever, whatever type of barbiturate that you're talking about, the chances of convulsing, not just while you're feeling bad, and sincerely, I had been busted, put in a county jail, and I convulsed my eighth day, and I was clean. I convulsed my eighth day with no probably, I got just a taste upset, and I convulsed. And, you know, thank goodness I was in a close setting where there were other addicts, and, you know, I had immediate attention. You go into grand mal seizures. Actually, I heard a doctor say, or one of the gentlemen over here, that it isn't as painful. God, I didn't even want to, I had pain, and it was longer lasting. It didn't just come and it was gone. I had it longer, and it's harder, I can honestly say, for me to stay away from Reds than it is to stay away from heroin, because they are so plentiful. And I used to kick a heroin habit with Reds, and then I'd convulse, you know. And I really, because I wasn't educated enough, you know, the majority of time when people convulse, they die, you know. No, everybody's too loaded to even stick a spoon in their mouth, you know. But really, there is a strong danger, and any time you think that it's not you, you know, try to get doctor's attention, because you can convulse up to 8 to 10 days later, and I mean it, because I did my eighth day clean. I convulsed straight out, and that's the way it was. Thank you.
As far as the withdrawal from a heavy addiction to barbiturates, they are, in fact, more dangerous than withdrawal from heroin, perhaps somewhat less painful. The person who is withdrawing from heroin is terribly sick. He's in pain. He is one of the most miserable of God's creatures, but only very seldom does he die from this very dreadful experience. It's a little bit like being seasick. You're not dead, but you wish you were. As far as the barbiturates are concerned, less painful, but they can cause severe acute psychosis. They cause seizures, epileptic seizures, and a certain proportion of people will die unless they're properly cared for.
Withdrawal from barbiturates, such as sleeping pills, is more dangerous than heroin withdrawal. Our public opinion survey tells us that only 11% of the general public think this statement is true. 55% believe it's a myth, and 34% didn't know. What about the experts sampled? Here the opinion is on the side of truth rather than myth. 57% to 40%, with 3% undecided. Again, a marked difference between public opinion and professional opinion. What conclusion can be made? The heroin addict and the tortures of withdrawal are well known. It is torturous, and we have no intention of minimizing the horrible discomfort of heroin withdrawal. However, we've heard little about the dangers of barbiturate addiction. We know less than we should about the risks in the abuse of downers, sleeping pills. The experts agree on this one, and the youngsters back them up. Withdrawal from barbiturates, such as sleeping pills, is more dangerous than heroin withdrawal. That is a truth. How are your opinions comparing to the experts? Our youngsters tell us about the availability of downers, uppers, grass, and heroin in their neighborhoods and in their schools. Law enforcement agencies are engaged in a constant battle in their efforts to stem the tide of drug traffic. Where do most young people get their drugs? This leads us to our fourth statement. Most youngsters are introduced to drugs by professional pushers. Truth or myth?
When I started using drugs, it was the type of thing where I didn't have peer pressure, or there wasn't no person that came out of the, you know, dark and captured me. It was the type of thing that I was curious and I wanted to know what it was. And I started meeting people that were using drugs, and I started finding out and learning how to get loaded, you know. I learned how to score, I learned how to clean weed, I learned how to fix, and I learned, you know, I learned the whole gamut that connects with drugs, you know. But the things that I didn't look at were me. You
know? I was introduced to drugs by just another person in school, and I just passed it on. And I don't know where the professionals are.
Like, I didn't turn on any innocent kids because they all came to me and said, look, I want to buy a lid. Fine. So I would sell them a lid and the $10 that they would give me. You know, selling six or seven lids, I could go out and buy another key. Like, I wasn't being a professional. I was just supporting my own habit. And I don't, you know, like somebody said, I don't see this guy in a black cloak hiding in the bushes, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to seduce little kids, you know, hey, little girl, you want some candy? That's not where it's at all.
When you talk about professional pushers, whether or not they, most teenagers are introduced to drugs by them, in the conventional sense of the professional pusher, no, they're not. I think probably the professional pushers in our society are the advertising agencies. It really upsets me when I see some woman who's in her kitchen slaving away at night on television, and she takes a pill and she's riding a horse on a beach. And it just blows my mind. And if I could do that, I probably would. You know, I'd love to go riding on the beach instead of being in the kitchen or something. The other, you know, there's a very popular commercial which talks about the problems in our society and how hard it is to get up in the morning and read that paper about another plane crash or another hijacking or another bombing somewhere. And if you just take this little pill, you're fine. And I think this is what tends to turn a lot of people on. So I think we're introduced to drugs, and teenagers are introduced to drugs by the mass media, by parents. But what I think the question was aimed at getting at directly was, who turns you on? Who is the person that gives you your drug? And when it comes to that, most teenagers get them from their friends. The drugs that are being abused are gotten from their friends. But the whole concept is pushed on us every day by the society.